Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. In this episode, we'll be continuing with part two of our discussion on cybersecurity. I'm Robin Jacobson, Senior Advocate at the Tax Institute, and I'm joined by Jamie Norton, Head of the ATO's Information and Cybersecurity Program, and Craig Gillies, Acting Assistant Director General at the Australian Cybersecurity Centre. Hi, Jamie, and hello, Craig.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Jamie, I can see how the ATO could also play a role in assisting practitioners. And I just want to relay to you a quick story of a breach I heard about some years ago. It was a vindictive staff member. So they're on their way out and basically either after hours or on weekend, whatever, accessed the practitioner's data. And this could well have been before it was all cloud-based and everyone else could have secure copies of it. But they not just copied all the client data, but deleted it. And so when the practitioner came into work on the Monday, there was nothing left. And their ability to attend to lodgements of activity statements and tax returns and know what their lodgement list was doing, that's just scratching the surface. So in that situation, is that a situation that the ATO could help reconstruct that or assist the practitioner to move forward through that dreadful situation?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we can help advise and guide to a degree the tax practitioner through that. I think there's also, as we talked about before, there'd be legal issues associated with that and keeping the right level of process, which is why you'd seek external help in that situation. So you could potentially use that for law enforcement or other things because obviously there's a crime that's been committed there. Then working through, because that is also still a breach situation, even though it's an insider threat where one of your employees or ex-employees has caused the issue. It's still a breach of personal information relating to your customers, so there still may be a notifiable breach situation there. Regardless of whether you're legally or not required to divulge that information, the ATO would always encourage that you alert anyone when their information has been, you know, removed from the environment so that people can take whatever steps they need in their personal life, change passwords, etc. And obviously also you notify the ATO so we can take the appropriate measures and then help if from that point forward to work through if there's missing data sets and other things, how we can help the organisation to recover those.
So, Jamie, next issue I wanted to raise with you. Can technology continues to evolve? So do you think that cyber criminals will pose a greater threat in the next few years? And further to that, what is the ATO doing to help protect businesses?
I think certainly the threat is going to grow where we're seeing the pace of the digital transformation, digital revolution is only increasing exponentially. And it seems like we've been on this journey for some years, but more and more we're seeing more digital identity data coming online, more businesses using that data to interact with government services or for their own purposes. So I think the richness of that data is going to mean that cyber criminals are going to be, they're going to be juicy targets. And as Craig said, they're not targeting individual businesses or individuals. It's just that the volume of data in aggregate that's available across the ecosystem is a target that they want to take advantage of. So they'll cast the net as wide as possible and try and take advantage of any flaw in the system. So we're going to continue to see broad spectrum attacks across the whole community and within the tax ecosystem that will continue to apply, looking for that weakest link in the chain. And unfortunately, that's where they'll take advantage of it and farm as much data as they can out of those environments. So I think that will grow. We'll get better at defending that and the message will certainly start to break through. But I think that cybercrime aspect will continue. And I think there's even potential for the sophistication of the cybercrime aspect where rather than being opportunistic, we'll become more formal, I guess, and more planned. And we'll see larger cybercrime syndicates operating in very structured ways. And we're already starting to see that in certain areas and potentially even on a nation state level becoming intermixed with the cybercrime aspect. So that's a significant worry because then we start seeing really large, very capable criminal activity happening and targeting certain sectors of the market. So in terms of what the ATO is doing, I mean, we do have initiatives like MyGovID. We're really focused on that stronger authentication of the Australian public and of our intermediaries and businesses as well. So we want not only multi-factor, but factors that are very hard to compromise, like, you know, biometric identity. So even if we do suffer, you know, if an organisation, the ecosystem, and there's a digital identity that suffered a breach, we still have another factor that hopefully protects our customers from from, you know, being taken advantage of.
Craig, do you agree with those comments?
I certainly do. I think one of the interesting elements there is that, you know, we assess that cyber criminals are going to increase in number and increase in sophistication. And as new technology comes on board, not only is that great for us and we get new phones and new devices and new tech that helps improve our lives and improves our connectivity with customers to derive benefit for them, it also allows an opportunity for cyber criminals to exploit that connectivity and to do us harm. And cyber adversaries are becoming more adept, and the likelihood of cyber attacks is increasing based on our growing dependence on information technology platforms and the interconnected nature of it all. And cyber criminals are a slippery lot, and they can pivot very quickly. You know, they're very agile, and COVID was a key example of that. As soon as COVID happened, we saw them pivot to COVID-themed phishing or, you know, scam email arrangements, setting up fake websites. I mean, the ACSC had to do a takedown of about 150 websites with telecommunication providers because they were registered and created by malicious actors that wanted to do us harm. And, you know, I've no doubt in my mind that moving forward, that with the talk of the COVID-19 vaccine, that we'll probably see some cyber criminals, you know, talking about vaccine, and you'll get a message saying, hey, click here to access your cyber vaccine. And that'll be completely bogus too, to steal your money and your data. So yeah, the threat is real. And I think one of the other things that Jamie mentioned insofar as the sophistication and professionalism of cyber criminals, what we're noticing more is that cybercrime gangs, you know, wherever they are in the world, are going more to a cybercrime as a service thing. Let's say I'm really good at writing, you know, code that breaks into systems, and, you know, Jamie is really good at writing really convincing emails to convince people to click on bad links. Maybe we'll tee up together. And, you know, I'll write the bad code that steals some stuff. Jamie writes the really awesome, convincing fake emails that kind of get sent out to customers or victims. And we'll work together, and maybe we'll sell our wares, and we'll go, hey, you know, Robin, you know, you can pay for us. We'll give you 10,000 emails, and whatever the ransomware or whatever the information that we sell, you know, we'll take 10% of the cut, sort of thing. So, ransomware as a service and cybercrime as a service is becoming a lot more pivotal. And I think the work that the ATO is doing to protect, you know, me as a citizen, as a taxpayer as well, but also as a part of the broader, you know, financial and tax community is really good. And the ATO and the ACSC have a really good working relationship, particularly around the digital identity work that we're going on to make sure that Australians and our information, my information, your information, is as secure as possible.
Craig, is there any evidence that this sort of activity is actually being undertaken in Australia? And what I mean by that is, listening to you talk then about how there are commercial arrangements entered into and the gangs are put together and this is all quite sophisticated, I'm just thinking of, is this cash economy, is this completely under the radar, or is this being undertaken by so-called gangs in other countries, which is outside the Australian criminal scope?
So in the Australian context, the vast majority of the malicious actors impacting Australia are not in Australia. They're not Australians. They're from outside looking in. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about China and Russia and North Korea. And there are certainly malicious activity occurring in those countries. And the Australian government has called out some pretty high stakes, highly significant instances attributing malicious cyber activity to those countries. But cyber criminals can be anywhere. You know, if you've got a computer and internet connection, you can do other things, and they can be anywhere. I am not aware of, you know, broad scale kind of malicious cyber activity originating in Australia. I have no doubt in my mind that there probably is some instances. We can't think that we're kind of immune in that, because, you know, the ability to use technology to make a profit in a malicious way, you know, doesn't stop at our borders. And I'm sure that the Australian Federal Police, who have a very good cybercrime technical capability, are probably doing a lot of fantastic but quiet work in making sure that Australians that are perpetrating crime, even online, are stopped, arrested and prosecuted. But I'm sorry, I don't have any clear information. A lot of the information comes at the broader scale from overseas.
We do see a little bit, whether overseas organised crime or other types of crime activity, but they might use a local presence. So they've just got the small figurehead, and that allows them to get past some of the geo-boundary issues and other things they might face if they're entirely outside. So we do see a little bit of that. But I think, to your point, Craig, we don't really see entire organised crime activity happening.
Yeah, and one thing that I also didn't, only made the connection now is the kind of victim-perpetrator being the same person. And this is the common money mule kind of scams. Where an overseas person will, they hire a local Australian or anyone to, transfer money from one bank account to another, or transfer money to iTunes gift cards and that sort of thing. And people think they've got a legitimate job doing that sort of stuff, when in fact they're actually, an accessory or perpetrating a crime. So we have seen instances of that, they've been more reported in the media when that's occurred. So, that's kind of a middle mixed arrangement. And from a business perspective, we saw that during COVID too, mostly in the accommodation. It's a credit card kind of fraud arrangement where a criminal steals a credit card, so I've got your credit card. I then buy or pay for, a hotel room or an Airbnb a couple of weeks in advance and go, hey, here's say $1,000. I'm just making that number up. And then a couple of days later, I go, I'm not going to join you anymore, but my credit card is expired now. So you can't actually refund it to my credit card I paid for, which was stolen. Here, put it into this other account or into this other credit card or pay me via this other means. So it's a way of washing money. And it's kind of one of those arrangements where the business is none the wiser, because then they haven't lost any of their money. They just lost a client or a booking. But they've kind of, been an accessory of a crime without their knowing it. And that's something that the AFP and the ACSC are looking at pretty closely too.
Jamie, can you comment on how the ATO works with other agencies at a Commonwealth or perhaps even at a state level to try and combat this and try and provide support and that collaboration?
Yeah, we work with a number of agencies across different aspects of, I guess, cyber and the ecosystem. We do work closely, as Craig mentioned previously, with the ACSC around a range of both internal and external cyber capability with the ATO. And that now it also includes looking at the broader scam, I guess, ecosystem, if you call it that, within Australia. And we work with other agencies like the ACCC and ScamWatch and other things in there to help combat that, particularly because the ATO is used as a spoofed originator for a lot of that scam activity, particularly around tax scams. But we work more broadly across, in fact, even within the ATO as a large service delivery agency, we work with our other large counterparts as well, like Services Australia and Home Affairs as well. We're all part of the government ecosystem, exchanging intelligence and other things to try and give ourselves as much sort of head start, I guess, on cyber activity that we need to be aware of. So.
Very good. The government is increasingly requiring taxpayers and tax professionals to interact with the government in a digital environment. And I'm thinking of the single touch payroll reporting and MyGovID and of course the MyGov platform itself. Where does the responsibility lay to ensure that those interactions are safe and secure? Is it with taxpayers? Is it with tax professionals, with the government, or a combination of those?
I believe we all have a part to play in keeping the broader ecosystem and Australia really safe and secure. There's been a lot of communication and media and other general awareness recently around the importance of cyber and the impact of cyber on the Australian economy. But I think there's still, from my perspective, and I think the broader security community perspective, there's still quite a lot of inertia between translating that we all know cyber is important into actually living that and, the consequences and the impacts of what that means. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's really the responsibilities on all of us to make that happen. So for individuals, that's really sort of owning that cyber risk to you as an individual. So as we said before, whether that means having multiple passwords, for different sites, so that if, sites get breached all the time, I've had my data breached in various sites over the years, and you can't sort of allow that to happen without sort of owning that, the risk and the responsibility, and making sure that you have different passwords and not just allowing your data to kind of get lost out there and used against you. ATO works quite closely with our digital service providers to make sure that they're coming from a posture of security as well. So we have various standards and checks that we do with them to make sure that they're interacting with the ATO in a secure way and keeping their own customers' data secure. So we have various checks and balances there. And then on the ATO side, we work very hard at making sure that our systems remain secure and that we're not, we obviously, we know very well the level of data that we hold on Australian citizens, and we take that very, very, very seriously. And it's one of our top strategic priorities. So I think it is an ecosystem piece. And I think there's a lot at stake, not just within the economy and within the tax ecosystem, but for Australia as a sovereign, you know, as a sovereign nation, if we don't get the cybersecurity problem under control, there's a lot at stake. A lot could potentially impact on the economy. So from my perspective, I think we all need to pitch in, and it is really a little bit of that Team Australia and making sure that we actually walk the walk rather than just talking about the issue, we actually, you know, deliver on it.
Craig, I'll throw to you on that as well.
The ACSE kind of has a mantra that, you know, cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. And that doesn't mean the responsibility is equal in every single instance, but we all have a part to play. And definitely cybersecurity is a team sport. And you know, the Australian Cybersecurity Centre has a responsibility to service the whole of economy. So not only government, federal, state, local, but, you know, large business, critical infrastructure, small businesses, individuals and families. So it's acutely, it's a big thing for us to kind of make sure that we inform each element of what they can do to support the cybersecurity resilience of the nation. And, you know, the ACSC works great with the ATO and a whole range of government agencies that help service us, including Services Australia. But under that whole of economy remit, we also work very closely with industry. Certainly, organisations as part of the tax ecosystem are important factors in ensuring that we help protect the nation and our citizens. One of the things that we do a lot is sharing threat intelligence and making sure that everyone has the greatest visibility of the cyber threats that are occurring around the world and around Australia, so that way they can protect ourselves. And the ATO is certainly a part of that arrangement. And we continue to work pretty closely together to make sure that everyone knows what their responsibilities are, and hopefully we can help out with our advice.
Wondering, Jamie, what tips tax agents can give to their clients about identifying legitimate comms that come from the ATO versus a scam attempt. And I'll share with you that recently I was contacted on my mobile. There was a phone call I answered, recorded message, advised me that there was an outstanding warrant for my arrest. Now, I was fairly confident that the information was inaccurate, but not everybody would recognise this straight away. And I'm thinking of more vulnerable citizens in society, or people that are particularly stressed or under pressure, as many practitioners have been over the past 6 months. So when those sorts of messages come through, and it could be a voicemail, it could be a text message or an email, how can they be sure that it's genuine and legitimate and not a scam attempt?
Yeah, this is a really challenging area, and I'm very conscious that it can, depending on the sophistication, sometimes be quite difficult to understand whether it's legitimate or not. So I have an area in my team, and we really do focus on disrupting as much of this as possible. Unfortunately, it is a little bit of a, you know, whack-a-mole scenario where, you know, they seem to pop up as quickly as we manage to sort of snuff them out. So, and we do work closely with the ACSC and other government agencies to try and use all technical capability that we have to disrupt these, but they are tenacious and they do find new and wonderful ways of impersonating the ATO and others and using fear as a factor. So I think that one of the things we do to combat this is try and be as black and white as we can about what the ATO will never do. Typically, if there's a fear response that you feel in the scam request, it's almost never, well, it will never be the ATO. We don't use fear as a mechanism to send you text messages and create that environment. So in terms of more specifics, we don't send unsolicited pre-recorded message to your phone. We don't threaten you with arrest. In general, we don't threaten you. So that's usually a telltale sign. We will never send you an email or text messages with a link in it saying log in, because we know that's a known vector of attack. You'll never get something from us saying click here and log in. So that's another black and white one. We also never request payment of debt through any kind of gift card, iTunes, Google Play, any other voucher. That's a clear sign that they're trying to filter money or wash money through the economy, and that's a clear cut. We do have lots of signs and other things at point of sale and various retailers to try and give a heads up on that. And we do train retailers to ask questions if you're trying to buy, you know, quantity of iTunes cards. But all of those factors there are clear signals that it's a scam. If you're unsure at all, I would encourage you to hang the phone up and then phone us. And the hotline for that is 1-800-008-540, and check the validity of it. It only takes a few minutes, and it'll give you peace of mind as to whether something's legitimate from the ATO or not.
Craig, any observations from your side?
Ditto. Good work from the ATO. I think, you know, a big part of being the last line of defence when it comes to cybersecurity is obviously we have all the technical bits, you know, patching and, you know, making sure your software's up to date and that sort of thing. But the last line of defence is often the human shield behind the computer. It's all about human behavior, and Jamie mentioned it about often scams are successful because they play on people's emotions. You know, they focus on fear, urgency, that you'll get in trouble if you don't do it, that sort of thing. So the staff that you have and business owners and operators and, you know, that sort of thing are the key last, you know, detection node for these sorts of things. And so knowing not to open things or click on links that are unfamiliar or, you know, emails that are random or you don't expect to receive in the first place. Knowing not to insert random or unknown devices into your computer. So don't find a USB stick in the car park and plug it in and think it's a great idea. And knowing what to do and who to contact in the event of an emergency. Often knowing who to contact and contacting them quickly can be the difference between a cybersecurity incident having an impact on you or a near miss and someone being able to prevent something from happening. And as Jamie mentioned, it's really important to educate your staff and not make that a fear thing, but kind of a reward thing to build a good culture when they identify or raise security concerns. So just say a staff member receives an email at the end of the day saying to pay this invoice and they're a bit unsure about it and they wait to tell you the next morning when you come into the office or come into the shop. Making sure that if that was legitimate, that there isn't a punishment, that they had the right thinking around it, and that's all working well, because that'll create a positive culture that puts your business or your organization's security and well-being at the forefront.
Jamie, as we wrap up, I wonder if you've got any closing remarks that can provide some key takeaways for businesses, including any information where they can find tips and resources.
I think for me, the three key takeaways are focusing, this is for all businesses, small, medium or large, focusing on the basics. Let's get the basics right. And there's a range of resources that can be useful in that regard. I know ACSC recently published a cybersecurity for agents of government services, which I think is a really good resource. And there's the small business one that Craig mentioned earlier. There's a range of other resources that the ATO also has on its website in terms of how to protect your business. There's some links that we have available there as well. But really, let's get those basics right, keeping your systems up to date, using multi-factor authentication and knowing who in your business has access to your data. These are just some of the key basic things that every business should have under control. And I think if we can get those things right, that'll go a long way to stopping the vast majority of breaches that we see, you know, happening publicly. I think if something does happen and there are, you know, cyber incidents happen all the time, contact us as soon as practical. And that number again is 1-800-467-033. And then we can look to take protective measures. So I think that's a key takeaway as well. And I think finally for me, the key thing is really keeping cyber at the forefront of everything we do and not just talking about that as a, you know, as a principle, but actually considering cyber in every aspect of your business as you're making decisions, understanding what the cyber risk is of things that you're doing and not having it as something that you look at, you know, once you've kind of well down the track on a decision, really think about it at the forefront, because that's the only way to make sure that we're doing things the right way and building that cyber basics and that cyber hygiene into everything we do and not trying to do it as an afterthought where it may be too late.
So, Jamie, your simple advice would be take it more seriously and think about it up front.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Craig, any closing remarks from you?
No, I completely agree. As I mentioned before, prevention is better than the cure, and certainly the basics are the way to start. You know, cybersecurity is a really scary topic for a lot of people, and it doesn't have to be. The internet and technology is awesome. It allows us to do some fantastic things. And just like riding a car, there's some safety measures that you want to adopt when you're using that. There's some safety measures you want to adopt when you're using the internet. And those basics are definitely where it goes. And as Jamie mentioned, seek help when something goes wrong. Call the ATO, call the ACSC, seek professional help, because the difference between contacting someone early can sometimes be a verification of your suspicions, in which case you've done the right thing, or in the event that there is an incident happening, it can be the difference between the incident being serious or it being a near miss and you getting back on track, getting your business back on track and helping service your customers as quickly and efficiently as possible.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. So thank you very much, Craig and Jamie.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You can subscribe to Tax Invoice so you don't miss out on any of the upcoming episodes about tax and superannuation. Great topics for listeners that we understand you want to hear about. Listen and subscribe on your favourite podcast player, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you downloaded this episode, or you can, of course, stream it from the tax officer's website. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.